Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have my guest, Candace Talmage, who is the author of The Afterlife Healing Circle, How Anyone Can Contact the Other Side. Actually, this book has two authors, Candace Talmage and Jana Simons. Today we're talking with Candace, who's calling from Texas. Welcome, Candace. Thank you for joining us.
Well, hello, Dr. Kolb. Thank you for allowing me to be a guest on your show.
So, you have written a book on the Afterlife Healing Circle, which is a circle of protection that one can form in order to contact, energies and souls on the other side. Is that correct?
That's pretty much correct, yes. Really, the circle is about bringing together a small community of equals to help someone relate either to a departed loved one or to a child coming into a life on Earth. It works both ways because the soul is a continuum.
Right.
It pre-exists the physical body, and it exists after the death of the physical body. So that communication is possible in any point on the spectrum, and you can do soul-to-soul communication even with someone who is in a physical body, but you need to do emotional and spiritual healing with this person. So it has a broad range of uses, but the protection comes from our spirit guides, and what we find when we do the Afterlife Healing Circle is that our definition of community gets a little bit bigger than we think of ordinarily.
Yes, I think we would be really surprised to understand how much help there is available from the other side. I know that we've been doing a meditation group weekly since 1990, and the spiritual communication we get is that there's a tremendous amount of help available from the other side that most of us are totally unaware of.
Exactly. I think that you, as a medical professional, will be interested in the Sunan Society and a soul who calls himself Dr. Sunan, who is available to you as well. We work with him because we are Sunan therapists. Now, the word Sunan is Hopi for harmony, and Sunan therapy is when we try to bring harmony between all four parts of self, spiritual, physical, mental, and emotional. That one part of self that gets so left out. So there is a Sunan Society, and they are on the other side, and they have been all manner of medical professionals when they were in physical bodies, and some of them have never been in human physical form. We would call them, quote-unquote, aliens. They're just souls in different dimensions. They're all very loving, and they're all available to anyone who is wanting some real expertise on healing at every level of self, physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual.
Yeah, I have some experience with etheric surgery. I've had some personal experience experiencing etheric surgery in a fracture that wouldn't heal because I had bone density problems, and some other experiences that my patients had that where they could feel things occurring inside their body that were more surgical in nature rather than just healing energy. And then, of course, the result of that was more of a surgical nature. In other words, actual physical things occurred within the person that normally would have required surgery, but the etheric surgeons were able to have that happen without the actual surgery occurring. Although it's interesting because the patient usually feels, not with pain or anything, but feels stuff happening inside their body that that indicates that something really is happening. And then x-rays can change, or, you know, physical motion can change, or something changes that indicates that the etheric surgery took place, because without it, there's no reason to have these changes occur.
Well, precisely, and yes, when we do Sunan therapy at the energy level, those changes also take place. It's just a matter of, because, of course, the physical body is a form of energy. It's just a physical form of energy, and that's energy that we can see with our physical senses. We can touch it, we can smell it, mm-hmm. we can see it, we can feel it, taste it. That is physical, you know, energy in a physical form. But there's mm-hmm. also energy that we can sense intuitively or with our soul senses, or what some people call them psychic senses. I don't care, pick your favorite label. But these are the mm-hmm. these are the senses that we all have and we basically ignore while we're in physical bodies, that allow us to perceive energy at the mental, emotional, and spiritual level. All right? It's mm-hmm. not physical, but it is, it does exist, and it is vibrating it at just frequencies that we can't perceive physically, but it exists, it's there. And to heal completely, we want to address all these energies, not just the physical body.
Right. So do you want to describe a little bit for the listening audience about how you form the healing circle?
Sure. The healing circle is something that anybody can do. All right, you don't have to think of yourself as psychic or specially gifted. But you do want to pay attention, and in the book there are some really simple exercises that will help you sort of turn up volume on those intuitive senses, because there's four intuitive senses, and people are stronger in two and weaker in the other two, everybody. It goes that way. So some people see, you know, with their third eyes, you know, they think in pictures, or they hear words inside their head, or it comes as an unfolding, or they sense anything. They can walk into a room and they can tell intuitively that there's been an argument or a heated discussion because the energy of that room will not be comfortable for them. And some people just get a knowing. They just know. They don't know how they know. They don't care. They just know. That's a very rapid soul sense we call soul mm-hmm. awareness. So you want to accelerate all these senses. You want to pay attention. Start paying attention to your intuitive half. It doesn't work like your logical left brain half, all right? But that doesn't mean it's invalid. It just means it works differently, all right? So pay attention. Read the exercise. Play with them. You want to do it when you're playing and you're light and you're comfortable. Because that is how you open up those senses, start to get information, and this is really about developing some self-trust. That's why people don't pay attention to them, because they don't trust themselves. They think, oh, this is weird. This isn't logical. You know, this can't be right because it's not logical. You know, there's logical information and there's non-logical information, and both are equally valid, but they serve different purposes, all right? So you're looking for your not logical information. You're looking for that emotional and spiritual information. And you just want to get comfortable with it and then bring a group of people together and find someone who really has a genuine need, either because they're an expectant parent or because they have lost a loved one, a friend or a relative who meant something to them emotionally. Mm-hmm. Because what disturbs me and where you can get into trouble is if you use communication with the other side as a lark, as a joke, you know, to enliven a party gone flat or because you're bored, all right? Mm-hmm. The seance, quote-unquote, has a really bad reputation, and there's a reason for that, because it is a trivialized and bastardized form of what can be a very beautiful, very helpful, very healing experience, all right? Because we think that's not real, we tend to think it's a joke, and it's not. So you don't have to take yourself seriously, but take what you're doing seriously, because this is mm-hmm. a serious communication, all right? So you gather together, not many people, six at most, maybe eight, just mm-hmm. depends, and you help this person. You get into the circle, you get the energy flowing, you always ask for protection from your spirit guides, always, out loud, every time. They can't protect you if you don't ask them every single time, because they can't mm-hmm. violate your free will. So you have the responsibility to ask, and then they will be happy to help protect you and bring in only the soul or souls you want to talk to. Because mm-hmm. just think about this. Would you go outside your door at 3 a.m. and yell, come on in, to just anybody who's passing by? Not very prudent, is it? You wouldn't take a walk unprotected in Central Park at 3 a.m. either. Well, you don't want to do that when you do a healing circle. You don't want to do that when you contact the other side. You want protection, and you want to have a genuine, valid purpose for making the connection. And once you've fulfilled that, then everybody in the group plays a role in helping the information come through, because, of course, that left brain needs to be satisfied that this is the soul or souls that the person wants to seek. Mm-hmm. So usually what happens is the soul intuitively kind of gets it that he or she needs to provide this kind of, you know, stuff that only the the person we call the inquirer would know. So what the people in the group do for the beginning is they help bring that information through, all right? And it's very strange, and it's not for them. It's for the person who's come to make the communication. So you have to encourage people to talk. Just talk. You know, it doesn't matter. And the inquirer will say yes, no, or I don't know. And the inquirer might not know, but find out later that, yes, this information is perfectly valid. I'll give you an example. Jana was part of an afterlife healing circle for a woman whose son had been murdered. And nobody was helping because it was a drug deal gone bad. And the woman was from a very fundamentalist religious sect, and they didn't believe in all this woo-woo stuff. But she was desperate. She wanted answers. She wanted to find the bad people who'd done this to her son and, you know, get revenge.
Right.
So they were in the first part of the healing circle, and Jana could tell that someone sitting next to her was getting some information but not voicing it. So finally she said, speak up, speak up. And the guy said, well, you know, this just doesn't make sense. I see a white picket fence, but it's not upright. It's on its side. So the bars are horizontal instead of vertical. And the inquirer, the woman, gasped and said, oh, now I know it's my son. He's here. Now, what that was is that nobody in the circle could have known this, but years before, when he was a boy, her son had taken a piece of white picket fence, flipped it horizontally, and tied it to, you know, nailed it to a tree branch, a tree trunk, so that his dog could climb up and be with him in his treehouse. And it was a piece of information that only he and his mother would have known. Because believe me, we you know, the people in there didn't even know the guy's name, okay?
Right.
Not until she voiced it in the circle. So, again, it's about trust. It's just about allowing and getting information that seems really strange, but it's not for you. It's from that soul to the inquirer. And when that happens and you voice it, and the person says, okay, this is the soul. I know this person or soul is present. Then you go into the second phase in which the person and the soul say what they need to say to each other with the help of the community. Now, I go back to community because, yeah, go ahead.
Well, I wanted to say that I've been present in some of these circles like this, and the souls that are communicating want to specifically identify themselves to the, you know, to the people they're communicating with through these very, very unique visions or information, that it is important that we understand this isn't just general information that could apply to anybody who died, you know, that very specific information will come through, like how they died or, like you said, something, a unique communicator like the white picket fence on its side, will be given so that the people in the circle know that this is, they're speaking with a specific, you know, energy or soul.
Right, and also what
it's
they
common.
Know
it's
is...
It's common to have that sort of thing happen.
Exactly.
You know, that's what I'm saying.
And the other thing that you do is that you ask for protection, and when you do that, you can be assured that the soul that comes in won't be anybody else. It will be the soul that you're looking for.
Yeah.
But again, but the left brain needs that, you know, oh, okay, these are quote-unquote facts that nobody else can know except the soul and the inquirer. So that's, again, we have to satisfy all of self, and that's what the left brain needs. So once the left brain can relax and say, oh, okay, there's something to this, then the emotional and spiritual communication can begin, and that where, again, where the community. And again, the community isn't just the people in the circle. It is their guides, their spirit guides. It is the soul or souls. And it is also angels, God, whatever you divine, however, the Great Spirit, that is all part of the community. So mm-hmm. I love the Healing Circle because I want us to start thinking larger about community, because community really mm-hmm. isn't just a small group of people here and now. It's in many dimensions, and going back to one of your first remarks, there's more help available to us here on Earth than most of us have any idea.
You know, if people would just realize that the answer to most of our problems are also available through this route of information. Like, for example, we've gotten a huge amount of information about the treatment of certain diseases, the specific, very specific information, not general, you know, like just, you know, that anybody could come up with, but very, very specific information that is quite unique and not on the planet at all. I mean, it's not anywhere, because you can search the internet for things. It's nowhere. So this information is very unique. It's very specific. And, you know, if scientists would just realize that they can get information about any problem, any environmental problem, the Fukushima problem, you know, the major problems that are occurring now, the energy problems, all of this information is available to us. We just don't realize it. We'll have to have engineers and doctors and technicians that understand the language within the healing circles. But it's not just limited to information from, you know, souls beyond. It actually is, you know, access to the entire Akashic record about everything, that any problem that you have, personal or planetary.
Well, that's
you just
a great
have to be able to understand the answer. Okay.
Exactly.
You know,
well, and that's a process of self-trust and allowing
right.
and growing.
And
so
also the files have to be there. I mean, you can't mm-hmm. give an answer for a unique type of surgery to someone other than a surgeon, you see. You know,
right.
the information has to match the files of the person getting it.
Well, and it's also the expertise on knowing how to implement it, all right?
Right.
Which is why I've always asked, you know, the professional people. We've had psychologists and doctors go through our intuitive training programs.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was talking to one particular doctor, and I was telling her, look, you know, because as far as I'm concerned, diagnosis is a lost medical art. They don't diagnose these days. They just run tests. And they go blindly by what the test says.
It's
which
also very
may or
expensive.
May not.
It's very
and
expensive
it's
to do it that way.
It's very
it really
expensive.
Is.
It's.
I mean, I have all
time.
These patients that went to the Mayo Clinic. They come back with $10,000 mm-hmm. worth of negative testing. They come here. I do about 9 different tests, lab tests, and an EKG. And the majority of my tests are positive because I know what I'm looking for.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, because you're using the intuitive information, and the neat thing about the intuitive information is that it can be specific to each person.
Right.
Testing is only general. It's like me. I have low thyroid. I test normal. I'm not normal when my thyroid's in a certain range. I know that. But
well, you should. The only test you should be using is basal metabolic temp. I mean, that mm-hmm. that basal metabolic temp is your most sensitive indicator of your thyroid condition.
Well, again, but
and it's
what
free.
We're talking about is, yeah.
It's free.
Well,
it doesn't cost a thing.
Well, the whole point is that if we expand our definition of community,
mm-hmm.
and if we are open to information that is not logical, but it is helpful, then you're right. We can get answers, and then the people with the expertise can help implement them here on Earth, okay, whether they're
right.
engineers or physicians or psychologists or psychiatrists. But we've closed ourselves off to half of our being, all right, our mental and our spiritual and emotional nature.
Mm-hmm.
And we're trying to live out of our physical and mental. You know, so that's half of who we are, and that limits us. And then by extension, our definition and understanding of community will be very limited.
Right.
So,
well, we're poised on the edge of a complete change, according to the information coming in from many sources, not just one, but many, many sources. All of our institutions are undergoing a change in the near mm-hmm. future. And this change is a result of an energy coming in that is going to shift everything. And we're going to be a lot more rational and a lot more intelligent and a lot more able to handle the problems that we have, rather than just bury them under, false pretenses and false thinking. I mean, we really have not addressed the major problems that are planetary.
Well, I always say that if you want to heal the world, start with yourself. And if you look at basically all the spiritual and religious leaders throughout traditions, they say the same thing, that healing comes from within. If you heal yourself, you automatically contribute to healing the energy of consciousness because your consciousness is part of the whole. Mm-hmm. So what I've tried to do for myself and what I've tried to help my clients do is take away the limitations on their self-love, and that automatically opens them up to more options and a calmer, more balanced and centered approach to just their lives and everyone. So that is, it's all connected. We can't, if we try to heal the whole without healing ourselves, we're invariably going to run up against free will and trampling on somebody else's limitations. And that induces fear. If we start by healing ourselves, we will come up with more creative solutions to problems, and we will change the receptiveness of group consciousness to change. And I know that, there's much energy coming in, and we know that this change is coming because if you look at every single institution we have, it's totally dysfunctional, and it can't last. You know, it's not sustainable. And I don't care what institution you're talking about, education, government, healthcare especially. Our healthcare system is crazy. Even, it's just not working. It's not functioning for doing what people want it to do. You know, it's ridiculous that you can walk out of the Mayo Clinic with $10,000 worth of negative tests. I mean, that's insane.
And no diagnosis.
Nobody can, and no diagnosis, no help,
yeah, well,
and nobody
but it's
can,
a bigger problem. The problem with healthcare is that the diseases that they're missing are often politically incorrect diseases like mold biotoxin disease, intracellular infection, which is essentially the basis of our biological warfare system. So no research is ever funded, and even doctors that are very educated in this area have assassination attempts. So, it's a big political issue. In other words, the real chronic fatiguing illnesses, the fibromyalgias, the diseases, even cancer, which is completely screwed up in terms of treatment and diagnosis and everything. The entire basis of healthcare being a financial model rather than a true healthcare model is the basis of the problem. But until we solve the political problems, and before we solve the basic corruption at the core of it, which is financial motivation rather than trying to help people regain their health, we're gonna a revolution has to occur in terms of this whole system in order for the system to be fixed.
I would encourage people, let's go back to what you talk about, a corrupt system, the healthcare financial model. Let's put mm-hmm. that into something like religion. The afterlife healing circle is an end run around both religion and mm-hmm. psychology that cannot and will not address the real needs of people for grief resolution and reassurance as parents. It's literally an end run around it, all right?
Right.
Because even psychiatry and psychology is now admitting that what they have prescribed, you know, the drugs and the self-help groups that they've prescribed for grief for decades don't work. They do not work. People stay in grief for decades. They can't
get out of it. Grief, you know, grief is an emotion that is based on incorrect information, for one thing, you know, incorrect thought, you know, thinking that the person is gone and you'll never see them again. And then also there's a component of grief that has to do with guilt. People who are significantly grieving often have a guilt thing going on with the death of either the pet or the loved one or whatever. There's some sort of guilt or regret or something in there that they need to forgive themselves for. I mean,
that's
a big component of it. And so when the person comes back and explains to them that it wasn't their fault and that they didn't contribute to their death or they didn't contribute to the, you know, the mess that they perceive, that they can forgive themselves and the grief can go away. I mean, that's really a lot.
Those
are the two main things that occur with grief. Number one, you think you will never see this person again. That's because you don't understand the nature of spirituality and your eternal soul. And then the second thing is the guilt, because most people who have a significant guilt, I mean grief, have a guilt associated with it, at least in my experience.
Well, they also have anger with it too. A lot of people.
Anger at God, which is dangerous. Very dangerous.
Well, but also anger at the soul. Why did you abandon me?
That's true.
But whatever it is.
Especially with suicide. That's true.
Exactly. Or accidental drug overdoses or something like that.
Right.
That look like
something
suicide.
They feel that they were not being responsible. Yeah. That's very true.
But even SIDS,
the sudden infant death syndrome, there's often a tremendous amount of guilt.
Traditional approaches don't work. Just like when you talk about parenting, there are all manner of parent blogs and parenting manuals, but they don't apply to a specific soul, all right?
Right.
So the little darling comes naked and screaming into the world with no user manual. And what the Afterlife Healing Circle does is enable an expectant parent or the couple to get to know the soul coming in, get to know their prior relationships with that soul, find out what name the soul wants, find out the soul's purpose, the soul's lessons. So in other words, now they have a roadmap. Now they can relax and be more of the stewards of that soul's physical childhood. And not, gee, I'm going to screw up and make a mistake. So that it helps relieve a lot of the anxiety that comes along with being a new parent, and it gives you some sort of roadmap or blueprint to the being who is coming into a physical body. So again, there is more information available than we are making use of, and that is why we are struggling so hard.
That's true. And we can also ask questions, you know, either of the soul that's communicating with us or of the guides and other, you know, helpers available if we have questions.
Oh, absolutely. Recently, I've just been having computer issues, and one of my spouse's guide calls himself Dave, and he's a handyman. And I found out recently that Dave keeps up with computers, and every time I do an update, I ask him to help and make sure it goes smoothly. And since I've started to do that, the updates have gone a lot smoother. It's just, silly little things like that, which aren't really silly. I mean, there's a big pain in the ass trying to deal with a recalcitrant computer, and we're all, you know, we all need our computers to work.
We're dependent on them, aren't we?
we depend on our computers to do our jobs and, you know, just for everyday communication now. So, you know, just stuff like that that seems so, in one retrospect, weird. And yet it's not. There's all manner of help available to mm-hmm. people. But they've got to be able to open up to their emotional and spiritual side and trust mm-hmm. what they receive. But that, again, gets back to healing self. Because most people do not trust themselves, and they certainly don't trust their intuition. They've been conditioned and programmed to ignore it because it's weird and it isn't logical. And then there's just the whole cultural bias against it. I mean, that's why creativity and creative people are considered so quote-unquote flaky, because they're not rational or logical. They're intuitive. They're emotional. But that's okay. There's a role for that. There's a part for that. It's about balancing the emotional, intuitive, creative with the logical, rational type parts of our being.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a place and role for everybody there. But unless and until we open up to that half of ourselves, and unless and until we start trusting what we receive intuitively and even recognize, because people are getting intuitive messages all the time, constantly. They can't help it. They have at mm-hmm. least 4 soul senses. But what they're doing is they're just tonguing it, saying, oh, that's just my imagination. Oh, that's just blah, 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 blah. No, it's not. What do you think imagination is? It mm-hmm. is outside the purview of the material. You know, any information you get that you don't get through your physical senses is coming through your soul senses, and it's there for a reason. All right?
And, so pay attention. I want to tell people that, at least for me and a lot of people who get impressions, pay attention to the impressions that you get when you first wake up, because they're often
Absolutely.
Very, very important. I often know all sorts of problems that are going to occur when I first wake up. So it mm-hmm. just pay attention to that information coming in, because you're close to the other side when you're waking up. You just are coming back from that arena, and your thoughts when you first come into your waking body are often very important information that you bring in from your, you know, your activities on during the dream state.
Precisely. Or you can actually put yourself into that, what I call subjective altered state, and mm-hmm. get information when you're at midday, when you're out
right.
and about. You just have to learn to tap it and trust it.
Right.
You know, accelerate it, do it consciously. That's a skill, and it takes time, and it takes willingness to play around, and mm-hmm. an acknowledgement that you are going to make mistakes. It's just like learning to do arithmetic. You don't mm-hmm. add or subtract or divide and multiply and get the correct answer all the time, but you don't throw arithmetic away and say it's not valid simply because your specific answer wasn't right. You say, oops, made a
right.
mistake, let's do this again. Same thing for the intuitive
mm-hmm.
side of you. You're not all your impressions are going to be valid, and you know, I always laugh when psychics and mediums try to do predictions. And because there's no way to tell if a prediction is valid, it could be perfectly valid at the time the prediction is made, but if the intent of anybody involved in an event changes, then the event will either not take place or it will turn out quite differently. So all you're doing is tuning into the intent of those involved at the point when
mm-hmm.
you tune in. If the intent remains the same, then the event will happen. And you can't always tell, because when you're in that side of your brain, of your consciousness,
mm-hmm.
what we perceive as time and dates, they don't mean anything, all right? Intuitively and spiritually, we have no dates, days, times, all right? It's only when we get
mm-hmm.
into the conscious, rational part of our being that we say, oh, it's 3 o'clock, you know, 3
mm-hmm.
p.m. or 4 a.m., that's when it means something. But when you're working on in the emotional, intuitive half of you, it means nothing. So that's
mm-hmm.
why it's so hard to say, yes, this will happen on this particular day at this particular time. I always say that, you know, prediction is pointless in a universe based on free will. You can certainly tap into people's intent, but understand that intent is not fixed. It can change, and often does.
There's one exception to that, though, and that's that there are events that are set in time, and they're fairly immobile.
What would one of those events be?
Well, there are certain events that are, say, astronomical, like, you know, things that are based on bodies in motion. So they're going to occur irregardless of anybody's intent. Do you see?
I believe that, but I can tell you that if you had mass consciousness or very strong consciousness directed toward those bodies in motion, you could change them. Even their course is not fixed. Thought energy can change. Emotional energy can change. Can change anything. But we don't fixate on that. We're fixated on ourselves in our own lives. So we don't look at the bodies and the stars and the planets and say, "Oh, I'm going to move Jupiter." Okay.
Right.
But it can't happen. It can't.
Well, and other events like death dates. There are death dates that are fixed. Now, there's death dates that aren't fixed. There's death dates that are variable, that free will can, or other things can move, but there are some things that are fixed, and that comes from Deepak Chopra's Book of Secrets. Have you read that?
Mm-hmm. No, I have not.
Well, Deepak Chopra, one of his chapters was on the Rishi Master's scrolls, and 5,000 years ago in India, people went into meditation. These Rishi Masters went into meditation and made these scrolls for people, say, who are living now. Deepak went and got his scroll, and it's a scroll written 5,000 years ago with his name, his parents' name, his name, his all the significant things in his life, his, you know, his children, his wife, his occupation, his, and then at the end, his death date. And so these scrolls, the things that are on these scrolls are evidently not real subject to free will. He said that everything on there was correct, except his mother's name was different than what she had told him. But when he questioned her, her actual name was what was on the scroll. So in other words, there are certain highlights of our life that are fairly written in stone. More so the big things, who you're going to marry, the children you're going to bring. Not to say that you don't have some free will in some cases. You do. I mean, you can decide to have two children rather than four, like it's in your book. But your intent, your strong intent before you come into body is often the contract that you made, and you're likely to go ahead and do that contract. You're more likely than to do that contract.
Right. And the contracts that you make before you come into a physical lifetime do definitely influence how you end up. But I know from past lives that I have broken contracts and gone off differently.
Oh, sure. No, so, I'm not saying you can't break a contract. but you know, some things like your death date, your absolute death date is, it's hard to go anything more than just, say, a few weeks beyond that. Do you see what I mean? If you have an absolute death date. I'm not talking about a choice to go out or not that occurs probably every 7 years for most of us. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the one that is, like, written by the Rishi Masters. That's one that is probably more likely to happen than not.
That could very well be, but I'm of the opinion that pretty much everything in your life is up to you, and that if you change your intent or decide that, you know, because you're not absolutely bound by a contract. The only thing that binds you to a contract is your desire to honor that contract. All right.
Right.
So if your desire changes and you want to go in a different direction with your life, then you can do that. And, you know, I would not even want to get my Rishi contract. I don't care. I'm busy, you know, I'm busy making up my life as it goes along, all right? And I can change at any point. So I'm, you know, it's interesting, but I'm not really worried about what people 5,000 years ago said about my life. It's up to me right now to determine the course of my life. You know, and I've grown to understand that, you know, you can't really make a mistake. They're all just learning experiences. Some are more pleasant than others, but it's really all just a learning experience. And then until you go through something, that's what I love about the Afterlife Healing Circle. Instead of reading about it or instead of having some medium or psychic tell you about it, you get to experience what it's like to get information from the other side through your soul senses. You get to experience the emotions of the group. You get to experience the emotions of the inquirer and the soul when they connect and they reach some sort of resolution or agreement, or they get things that were unsaid that needed to be said. I mean, that's just amazing. There's just relief and resolution. I mean, you know, Jana and I always say, you know, it's never too late to say goodbye or too early to say hello. You know, and that's true, and that knowledge itself could relieve a lot of the anguish that you were talking about, that people think, oh, this person's dead and I can't say goodbye, or I can't say I love you, or I can't say what it is I meant to say and never said. All right, so that's you know, that's one of the things. Now, it is different because, of course, they're not in a physical body. And when you are in a physical body, it really helps to have that facial expression and that touch. That really gives a new dimension to the interaction. But the emotions and the spirit are still involved, very much involved in this communication. So you do get...
You could partake of what Raymond Moody has developed. You know, the mirror in the darkened room with the mirror where the soul appears and talks to you.
Right, that's the psychomantium, and that's one way to do it.
Right.
In fact, I've read about that, and what I think
Raymond Moody lives close to us here, and he does noetic science at my office. So he actually talked about that and showed pictures of it at our noetic science meeting. I'm getting him back again. I'm not sure exactly what month he's going to do, but he'll do noetic science here again on his new material.
That's great. And he's doing a lot, and the mirror gazing technique will work for some people. What I like, again, about the Afterlife Healing Circle is that instead of being alone doing this, you are in a group. You have the emotional support right when you need it, when you're actually going through the experience. Because, again, you can ask questions, but people don't know that they can ask questions. They don't know that they can have a conversation, and the conversation can continue even after the Afterlife Healing Circle if they want it to. I mean, that's one of the things that we do in Sunon Therapy, which is the kind of energy healing that I do, is that if your issue goes beyond just, I need to know that you're not lost to me forever, or I need to say goodbye, if you have real substantive issues that have that are causing a person emotional problems, you can talk to a person who's still in a physical body at the emotional and spiritual level, or you can talk to a deceased person. It doesn't matter, all right? You could talk to a child of SIDS. Say the child came in and, you know, died as an infant shortly after birth. It's perfectly possible to talk to that baby, and might be necessary to do it one-on-one with a therapeutic intent other than just a resolution intent, okay, because it's a little bit of a different thing. I mean, there are private, personal issues that will come up when you're doing it in therapy that won't come up during an afterlife healing circle.
Right.
You know, and it's the method is the same, all right? It doesn't really matter. It's just, what issues do you want to explore, and how extensive do you want to make it? And it's always nice to have support, all right, when you do that. Because I interviewed a lot of people for my book, and one thing that struck me is that when the dead person contacted them in a variety of ways, it was always a surprise, and they weren't prepared to take advantage of it. They were too shocked by the actual knowledge that they were communicating with someone who is quote-unquote dead to actually say, okay, wait, whoa, let's slow down and have a conversation here, all right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that through what you're doing and through what I'm doing, through what Dr. Moody's doing and a lot of people are doing, is to get, again, it goes back to this concept of community. If you recognize that the quote-unquote dead and the quote-unquote not yet born are still available to you, their consciousness exists and can be communicated with, if you can get over that hurdle, then the conversation becomes a lot easier and smoother, no matter where it happens or when it takes place.
Yeah, and you can even prepare before you go into it, you know, think about what you want to talk about.
Exactly. Think about what you want to talk about. Do a meditation. One of the healing places that we take, Jana and I take people to, is what we call the garden. It's in the heart chakra, all right? And it literally, people see it or feel it or know or understand that this is a garden in their own consciousness. In fact, this is the original Garden of Eden. All right? That's why gardens mean something so profound to people, because that's a psychic space within our own consciousness where the heart and the soul and the mental body and the physical body meet. Most people, their gardens they're small and they're dark and they're neglected because people don't go there. They don't know to go there. So what we do is we take clients there, and we ask their spirit guides to come in and help them clean up their garden. And we tell them, the more you pay attention to it, the more time you spend here. Even when you're walking around wide awake, doing your thing in the material world, the more time you spend here, the more love you put here, the bigger it will grow, and the more it will help you. Because you can invite your guides, you can invite the Great Spirit, you can invite healers, it's sort of a meeting ground where all of you meet and your larger community can come together, and we call it the garden. And it's an amazing thing, a big dynamic. So you can take a parent with an infant dead from SIDS and bring the two of them together in the garden for a therapeutic purpose. Mm-hmm. And then that parent can reunite with that child anytime the parent wants, again, by the child's energy coming into the garden and being there. I mean, I've had past lives in which I have lost a child. It was thought to be through sudden infant death syndrome, but it was actually through murder. And I cannot even begin to describe to you when that baby came back into my garden and I could hold him in my arms again. That was a huge healing experience for me. It happened back in late 1998. All right. It was just amazing. So I would love for that healing experience to be available to any parent who has lost a child. That is profoundly therapeutic.
Would you like to give your contact information?
Well, you can reach Jana and me through our website for the book, and it's just www.thehealingcirclebook.com. There's a contact form, and there's a description of the book, and you know what we've written and everything, and you know other books that we've written, and you know. You're right. There is amazing amounts of really helpful, practical, I call it practical spirituality, all right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a person who is, I'm very Western, all right? And Eastern mysticism, I don't have much patience for it, okay? It's beautiful. It's wonderful. It's just not my cup of tea. I like my spirituality like everything else. I want it to be practical. I want to be able to apply it in my life because I live in a Western world, and I have to earn a living, and I have a spouse and parents and a house and all that kind of stuff. So how do I integrate this larger community and my larger self, the emotional and spiritual, how do I integrate it into the life I have? And the process of doing that, of course, changes the life you have, all right, immensely, as it's changed yours and changed your patients. But don't think that you have to go to India or Peru or some distant physical place to be spiritual. You are a spiritual being walking around with your mortgage and your job. how do you bring that into your life? How do you express it? Well, the healing, afterlife healing circle is one way to do that. And there are many other ways to do that, but they're not as separate. Again, it's just like the dead and the not yet born are not as separate as we think. Well, the practical spiritual and the emotional can be as much a part of your life as any other expression of your true self.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see why not.
Oh, great. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Candace. We appreciate your time.
Well, thank you. I've enjoyed it.
Well, we've been interviewing Candace Talmage, who is one of the authors of the Afterlife Healing Circle, and I would encourage people to get the book to understand how they can do this kind of very practical, and it should be a lot of fun as well in terms of new experiences and adventure if you've not done it before, to form your own afterlife healing circle and maybe get some answers and make some acquaintances of the spiritual help that's available for you. So thanks a lot, Candace. We appreciate you joining us.
Thank you.
Now, next week, we'll be interviewing Amy Major, who is the author of Toward the Light. And then on the 3rd of October, Sherry Breschia, Taste No Pain and Great Taste No Gluten. I guess that is a gluten cookbook and manual. And then Dr. Jill Carnahan will be joining us for a discussion on mold toxicity and how to diagnose and treat that very common cause of fibromyalgia. Thank you very much for joining us. This is Temple of Health Radio Show. Please join us next week.